Welcome to Dr. Drew Podcast, everybody. Of course, keep the winds in the sail of the Corolla Pirate Ship. And also, head over to drdrew.com if you wouldn't mind. Get on that contact list. We appreciate being part of that. You can send in emails. I can bring them into this show or any of the other shows that are there at the website. Check out the other podcasts. Click through on the banners. These are all people that we can stand by that help keep wind in the sail of the Pirate Ship here at Corolla's Network. So I appreciate you listening. Appreciate you being part of this. And, of course, tell a friend. And today I am quite honored to be revisited by our friend, Dr. Kate Shanahan. You can follow her at Dr. Kate with a C, Kate Shanahan, S-H-A-N-A-H-A-N, S-H-A-N-A-H-A-N. Also, the website is drkate.com, Dr. Kate, C-A-T-E. And Kate, welcome as always.
Thanks for having me back on your show, Drew.
Anytime. So the new book is Deep Nutrition, Why Your Genes Need Traditional Food. And this is something you've I've heard you speak on before. Is there a new take on this or new information?
It's been re-released in paperback. There is somewhat of a new take on it, because actually right now I'm working on another book, the next book. There's always a next book.
Yeah.
And this one is really focusing on weight loss. I hadn't really done that. Like Deep Nutrition, if you follow it, you can lose weight because it helps your metabolism get healthy, but it's not targeted to helping people identify what's wrong with their metabolism, which has to do with energy. So that's really what I think is missing from the conversation around weight loss and actually health in general.
Yeah.
We don't talk very much about energy and, whether or not we have enough.
Yeah, indeed. Let me give you some of the vital stats on Kate, everybody. She's a biology trained, then biochemistry and genetics at Cornell for graduate degree, and then Robert Wood Johnson Medical School. Are you an internist by residency training or?
Family medicine.
Family medicine. Interesting, you're 10 years in Hawaii studying ethnobotany. I didn't know that. And what I like about Kate more than anything else, because she's a biochemist, she's a real deal biochemist, she does not make claims that she cannot substantiate. And the science is so complicated. I don't remember if you said something, Kate, to me once, was essentially, there's only very few things I can really say anything about because it's just too complicated. And the things I can say something about, I can say about it, say something with definitively. And that's that.
Exactly.
Fair enough?
Yes, exactly. There's, even something as simple as like what kind of fats are good and what kind of fats are bad, understanding that, actually unraveling the reality of it and discovering that it's quite different than what I learned in medical school, took a lot of different approaching the question from a lot of different angles, different sciences, including biochemistry.
Well, let me use an N of one here, and I'll be a case and describe a little something that happened to me, and you try to make sense of it for me. So I've always been sort of metabolic syndrome, right? So I've always had sort of central weight distribution, fat distribution, adipose distribution, and hypertensive and hypercholesterolemic and maybe some insulin resistance, very much addicted to carbohydrates, and someone convinced me to start lifting heavy weights that would help my back and some of the leg stuff. And lo and behold, it did, but then I gained a bunch of weight. And so somebody said, look, just try the protein only. Just get on the carnivore diet. It'll be easy for you. Just some eggs and meat. And as God is my witness, within about 4 days, I was transformed. And
really?
I've been on this diet now for about 3 or 4 months, and it's been if somebody had tried to describe to me what happened to me, I would not believe it. And so
are you doing like pasture raised meats or
I'm doing mostly that, and I slip and slide a bunch. I eat a bunch of green vegetables, and I do eat fish, and I eat some turkey, and I eat other stuff. But when I feel the best, I'm eating eggs and red meat and getting moderate amounts of fat from red meat.
Is it where you're making it at home, or are you going out to eat?
Making it at home. And
I think that's the key.
And after about – and I remember your admonition that we have to eat close to the bone too, so I eat everything down to the bone. I eat bone marrow, all those things that you always advocate. I go for all that. And I had a cholesterol done recently. Now, I've been on Vitorin for about 25 years, and I've got a horrible family history of large vessel vascular disease, but my calcium score – 10 years ago was zero. Okay.
Wow. Doesn't get better than that.
Yeah. And my LDL was always 120 no matter what I did. even on moderate amount of statin, I could barely get it below 100. But then when I went on Vytorin, which deals with the absorption of cholesterol as well as the metabolism, the LDL dropped to 70. Boom. On a tiny dose, a quarter of a tablet of Vytorin. Okay? And I've been on that ever since. My HDL never got much above 50, maybe 60, until I got on this diet. When now my LDL and my cholesterol, my HDL and my LDL are now both 70.
Well, maybe you don't need the medication so much
anymore.
Maybe I don't. But I think the key is that you are doing most of this at home because you're in control of the fats. And this gets to the vegetable oils, which is where I think most conversations really should center around when we're talking about nutrition, because we don't realize it, but 80% of the average American's calories, fat calories, come from these vegetable oils.
Uh-huh.
And it's not that we are cooking with them. So I should define what I'm talking about, like soy oil and canola oil. Those are the two most common, and cottonseed and corn, as well as sunflower and safflower. And at restaurants, you also will get grapeseed and rice bran oil. So these are all industrially processed, refined, and polyunsaturated. And what that polyunsaturated word means, it's kind of like the opposite of saturated. The saturated fats are stiff. The polyunsaturated fats are physically, we're talking about molecularly,
yeah.
This is that biochemistry, they're unstable, they're wiggly, and so that's why they're oils. And they are unstable in our bodies as well. And here's the most important thing about them. We cannot use them for energy without damaging our mitochondria, which are the little factories in our bodies that produce energy, because of their instability. And what happens is it actually produces free radical and free radicals are one of the two kinds of, well, it's kind of like radiation. So it's bad for us in the same way radiation is bad for us. It makes these little mitochondria that are supposed to be producing energy for our bodies. It damages them and makes them start leaking free radicals.
Right. So free radicals sort of tear through everything. I sort of think of them as
exactly.
These sort of these very powerful polar phenomena that can rip things apart that are normal biology.
And why radiation is damaging is because they are these high energy free radical particles that just destroy your molecules, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like ripping apart the infrastructure of how your cells are supposed to be operating, and it doesn't work out so well for your cells when there's free radicals flying around wherever they come from, whether it's from radiation or vegetable oils. Or cigarette smoking. Cigarette smoking is bad for us
what do you think about carbohydrates and free radicals? I got a feeling there's something there for some people. I don't quite know where it's coming from, but it feels like it to me.
There definitely is. And it turns out, the ketogenic diet, right, is super popular now.
Yeah.
And what it does is it gets people eating more fat, but not just any fat. It actually is one of the few diets that talks about the type of fat because it defines things like, well, you should eat butter, you should eat eggs, you should eat cheese. So it's moving people in the direction that you have just moved.
Yep.
By focusing specifically on, like, here's the foods you should eat.
Yep.
And it gets people's carbohydrate levels down. And what I first learned about ketones, of course, we learn about it in medical school, right? And what I learned in medical school was...
With diabetes, mostly.
Well, what I learned in medical school was that ketones are the byproduct of an abnormal metabolism, right? Couldn't be farther from the truth, actually. Ketones are very important for brain function, and your liver processes body fat that's been released so that it can get into the brain by making ketones. It just chops them up into little bits, basically, so they actually slip through the blood-brain barrier. Now, bam, your brain has energy. And it turns out that when cells are burning ketones compared to when cells are burning sugar, they are generating energy much more efficiently. And this was actually first brought to my attention in 2010. There was a researcher from the NIH who studied ketones, compared ketones versus sugar, in heart muscle, and it's a very good model because the heart will squeeze a certain amount of blood, and you just measure how much blood, and that way you can see how efficient is the muscle. And so he found that compared to sugar, ketones will beat 30, well, a heart burning ketones, I should say, will beat 30% more blood, which is huge. It's, you know, it could be life-saving.
Yeah.
And he was studying this in the context of, well, what do you do to help people with heart failure?
Yeah.
And at the time, because there's such a backwards understanding of nutrition and what ketones are, he said, you know, too bad we can't really use this insight because to get the body to produce ketones, you have to consume saturated fat, and we all know that's bad for you.
Right.
And so after his lecture, a bunch of us from the meeting went up to him and said, you know what, no, that's, you know, actually this is really life-saving, and forget what you thought you knew about saturated fat. And that was 2010, and it's taken a while, but there's just been a massive flood of research on ketones and all their benefits since then. And it's all speaking to just having the body get the kind of fuel that it needs to be able to produce energy more efficiently.
Let's get into the weeds a bit. How exactly are the ketones used for metabolism?
Well, let's start with where, assuming they come from the body fat, right? So between meals, your body fat releases fat. And that's really important to understand because a lot of folks following the ketogenic diet think they can just eat more fat and they'll be producing ketones. But it has to be under a certain set of circumstances that only happen between meals when your hormone levels are just right, right? You can't have a lot of insulin. You have to have enough glucagon. So this is only going to happen
between meals. Is non-ketone fat available for energy?
So ketones are manufactured in the liver,
right,
out of body fat. And once the liver gets the right hormonal signals to do that, then the ketones are produced, you know, in varying amounts in different people. And so you can actually measure this in your bloodstream. And we don't actually even yet know, this is such a new science, we don't even know, like, the amount of ketones in the blood that you need to have in order to really get the benefits of ketones. But the other thing is we also don't know that it doesn't just happen from burning fat. And so what I'm talking about here is the reason we make ketones is not because that's the only way to utilize fat energy. It's because ketones are small enough to get through the blood-brain barrier. It's really for our brain that we make ketones.
Is brain use any fat?
The brain probably does also actually use fat that's been transported more slowly.
Right.
But it's the ketones that seem to really be able to give you the benefits of this ketogenic diet. And so it was first studied actually more than 100 years ago for controlling seizures, right? So 100 years ago, we did not have all these nice seizure drugs.
Yeah.
And it turned out that they discovered that kids following certain diets would just not have seizures. And I don't exactly know how they discovered it, but then they used that to control seizures. And it worked fantastically. And in fact, it still works. It's still actually recommended for, you know, drug-resistant seizures.
Yep, I've seen that.
And so it just works fantastically. So I think this has to do with the fact that it's a source of energy. Like, you're able to get the energy that your brain cells need to function normally. And ketones work better than sugar, right? If you're able to produce 30% more energy, well, then that's... The brain is very energy hungry.
So let's talk about that. So glucose is actively transported in, right? Is ketone actively transported in?
It actually, yeah, that's a great question. Yes, and so it is actively transported in through a special kind of a transporter that's very, very fast.
I was going to say it's probably more efficient, a faster transport. Okay, and once in, it's got to get to the mitochondria and affect. Well, what? What is it doing, the ketone?
So it has to be used by the mitochondria to produce ATP energy. And all it does is it gets oxidized the same way as sugar does. It's just that it gets in there faster, and once it gets in there compared to sugar, there's less waste product produced because it's a matter of even numbers. So this is kind of silly sounding, but sugar is broken down into 2-3 carbon molecules, and the mitochondria really love 2 carbons at a time. Mm-hmm. And so when there's that extra carbon, it actually is broken off and essentially wasted, and it produces CO2, which turns to acid, and cells hate acid. Mm. And so that may be the reason why cells that are allowed to burn fat and ketones instead of sugar work more efficiently, because you don't produce this waste product, acid.
What are they doing with the 2-carbon molecule?
It's breaking it down for energy by the electron transport chain.
Yep.
Actually sucks off, it goes through a complicated process called the Krebs cycle.
Right.
So this is like very basic biochemistry,
right.
And it's a beautifully complicated process that actually inside the mitochondria, it ends up pumping protons across a barrier, and it's like a dam. It's so like physical, right? Like you just push these protons across this barrier, and then you have all these protons on one side, and they want to come to the other side. So when they come through, they actually turn a molecule that looks exactly like a turbine in the Hoover Dam.
Yep. And that's where the ATP comes from.
That's how it, yep, that turbine physically sticks a phosphate, and it turns ADP, diphosphate, into ATP, triphosphate. And ATP is the energy currency of the cell that runs all of our enzymes.
Yep.
And
when I was studying biochemistry, that cell membrane process had just been discovered. And we were like, oh, my God, why didn't we think of this? Because it made such sense. It just was like, because I was, particularly for neurobiology people, all we were doing was studying membrane biophysics and, you know, looking at all that. It's like, oh, well, this is another membrane biophysical mechanism, just another one. And it's something that looks like a bacteria. And we know about this in bacteria, too. So why didn't we think about the symbiosis of all this?
Yeah, it's really amazing, and it's the reason that we breathe, right? So that is the thing in our bodies that uses oxygen.
I really think some alien bacteria came in on an asteroid, and that's where large cells came from, and animal cells. I'm not kidding. I really have this feeling. I mean, where did this happen? How did we go from single cell organisms to these amazing complex things, other than having this symbiotic relationship with these little things inside our cells that magically look exactly like bacteria?
Yeah, nobody knows, but you know, I mean, it is true that it was happening at a time when the Earth was changing from not having very much oxygen to having a ton of oxygen, and the essential part of the mitochondria is the electron transport chain, and that is a way of controlling oxygen energy. So, you know, it may have evolved originally as simply as an antioxidant, and then the energy equation came in after the fact, almost.
I mean, the addition of energy, the storing of energy.
Yeah, the ability to make energy out of the essentially moving those hydrogens around as a function of being an antioxidant to protect all life on Earth from dying from oxygen, which it almost did, right? That was like the first environmental crisis was caused by plants, because they produced all this oxygen, and oxygen is a high, you know, dangerous molecule if you're not ready for it.
You've got lots of electrons to spare, or can pull electrons. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Interesting.
So that's the energy equation, and it all comes back to the ketogenic diet and answering, you know, why are you feeling better? Well, if you are no longer eating fats that your body can't burn properly, these polyunsaturated fats, suddenly your mitochondria are working better, your brain's working better, and that's real.
I definitely had more alertness. I needed less sleep. And then the first 2 weeks, something very strange happened. I was aggressive. I had some, like, anger outbursts. Isn't that funny?
Really?
Yeah, very weird. Very weird. I'm not sure if that was a coincidence or if that was something related to the diet. Isn't that funny?
Who knows? Or testosterone, right?
Maybe, right?
Yeah, if you're able to use, if you're getting more cholesterol and you're able to use it more efficiently somehow.
I think that's right. I wondered about that too. The fact that I'm wondering if I'm suppressing my LDL too much with the Vytorin.
Well, there's a bunch of us actually who use the ketogenic diet. So by us, I mean like weight loss doctors, and there's a society called the Obesity Medicine Association. Mm-hmm. And one of the past presidents actually sort of carried the torch of the Atkins diet forward, and his teachings are that, you know, LDL cholesterol isn't actually the bad actor intrinsically. Yeah. It's only when it's oxidized that it's bad, and we should really be testing people for whether or not their LDL is oxidized. And a surrogate of that is your you can actually do so what these doctors and myself actually we measure is, well, we measure all of it like every other doctor does, but what we actually look at is not the LDL cholesterol or the total cholesterol. We actually look at the triglyceride number and the HDL number, and we take a ratio, and if your triglycerides are more than 2 times your HDL number, then that indicates that the fat actually is staying in circulation in your body too long, and it's basically, I'm sorry, in your bloodstream too long, and there's like some kind of resistance. But the bottom line is it stays in your bloodstream too long and can start to build up in your arteries.
Well, I would say that has always been the case for me in spite of a control in the LDL until I started this diet. And now my triglyceride is 75.
Well, and guess how those doctors who look at it this way, guess how we treat this high triglyceride to HDL ratio?
Same diet I'm taking.
Exactly. We get people to get off or drastically reduce their carbohydrates, and we have them eat more just natural fats, and that gets them away from these vegetable oils.
It's crazy. Blinds Galore, everything that Blinds Galore creates is 100% custom, meaning your blinds or shades will be made just the way you want them right when you place the order. Don't bother with the stress of dragging yourself out to the store or just one of those prepackaged old box stores. Forget it. This is more than the blinds aisle. This is blinds experts. Plus, they're family-owned, family-run, and they care. I know these guys. I've met them all, and they're great. And I've been a customer, and I'm telling you, they help you all the way along. You do it all from home, get 100% custom product, and at a better price. BlindsGalore.com was the first place you could buy blinds online, and they've covered over 2 million windows and counting. They make it easy. If you need design advice or measuring help, their expert in-house customer care team will be there for you every step of the way. And Blinds Galore will even set you up with 15 free samples and free shipping on top of the free expertise. They want you to be happy. You will be, like Iowers and Corollas. We all are. Whether you need more privacy to sleep, cool down, or just fix up a room, Blinds Galore has exactly what you're looking for. Blinds Galore makes it easy to get the custom blinds and shades you've always wanted in your home. Check out BlindsGalore.com and let them know I sent you. That is BlindsGalore.com. All right, I want to discuss omega-3s for just a second. Omax 3 Ultra Pure. This is the purest omega-3 supplement on the market. And in case you don't know, omega-3s have been suggested as one of the healthiest supplements out there. I take them. And, of course, there's controversy and dialogue about what the balance can be. But it's clear, pretty clear that most people should be on omega-3, both for cardiovascular protection and for brain effects as well. They have this cool thing they call the freezer test challenge. Basically, if you freeze any other omega-3, it'll get cloudy. It's all filler. But with Omax 3 soft gel, it's clear. It's that pure. It's clinically tested. It's the purest option, so no fish burps. And, of course, you've seen supplements like this in the store, but many of them don't contain enough of the omega-3s to give you results. With omega-3 Ultra Pure, it's almost 94% pure omega-3 fatty acid. Purest concentration on the market, and they have a patented EPA to DHA ratio of 4-to-1 that is specifically engineered for inflammation and joint pain. So whether you're an athlete, student, parent, whatever, working professional, everyone can benefit from Omax 3 Ultra Pure. And best of all, you can notice the positive effects often within a few days. Go to tryomax.com/Drew today to get a box of Omax 3 Ultra Pure for free with your first purchase. Try it. Tryomax.com, tryomax.com/Drew, and you will get a free box of omega-3 with your first purchase. Tryomax.com/Drew. Terms and conditions apply. And finally, Omax 3 comes with a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have plenty of time to try it and
feel that Omax difference. Well, I think video online conferencing is just ubiquitous now and has changed the way we do business and podcasting, fewer trips, and it's like being there. But oh my goodness, with Zoom, it has just risen to another level of quality. And in 2018, Zoom is the winner. It delivers flawless video, pin drop, clear audio, instant sharing across any device, desktop, laptop, tablet, mobile, whatever. And you will see the HD video is simply striking. It's so easy to use. It's so intuitive. For the first time you see it, and then check this out, the first time you see 49 participants live on the screen, it's just too much to be true, but they do it. They do it all. You can share anything with anyone from any device, Word file, spreadsheet, presentation deck, YouTube video, photo. Zoom is everything you've always wanted. They thought of everything with amazing features I bet you didn't think of. You can even do things like set up a green screen behind you and make a backdrop, say, with a logo or some exotic location. If you haven't tried Zoom, you're going to wonder what took you so long. Now, if you already use Zoom, you know what I'm talking about. If you don't, find out. Visit Zoom, Z-O-O-M, Zoom.us, and set up your free account today. That's right. Meet happy with Zoom Video Communications. Set up your free account today at Zoom.us.
Now, the question, is there too much natural fat? In other words, you know, I use now natural fat to curb my appetite, too. So I will have bacon or something like that here and there, you know, right? So
yeah, that's a really important question because so many folks feel like, well, if I'm eating healthy stuff, I can have as much as I want and, you know, calories won't matter. And I'm sure that's not what you're getting at.
But it's still a diet. And so you get weird. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
I get weird. I certainly miss carbohydrates and sometimes I'll just have cravings that isn't really hunger. And I've lately been just giving it fats, which I'm sure is wrong, but that's what I've been doing.
Well, you know, if you're not feeling bad, if you're not feeling hypoglycemic,
nothing like that.
Yeah, and no nausea, no shakiness, no sweating or heart palpitations.
Nah.
So I don't know that it's wrong to do that, you know, unless you're just plain old overeating.
I'm doing a little bit of that too.
I've been doing,
but one of the things about this diet, you can correct course very quickly because you're eating. It's not, you're not hungry all the time. You
yeah,
know what I mean? So you can really, you can adjust course. It's pretty easy. I think where I've jumped the shark a bit is where I start bringing in, I'll have nuts and things like that, peanuts and things to sort of snack on or reward myself with. And I noticed that's a difference. It's different.
Yeah. So if you overeat, you know, even a super healthy diet, that's not good either because, you know, overdoing anything, obviously, is not good. But, the kind of carbohydrate that I feel like is the best, and I actually have started to use it as a tool for folks who really can't burn their own body fat efficiently, which is a whole other issue that I'm finding is, you know, a major problem for people trying to follow diets. And we can get into that if you're interested.
Yes, I am.
But the kind of carbohydrate I'm recommending for folks like that, actually, that can't burn their body fat is, there really isn't a name for it. So I'm calling it slow carb. It's not like a low carb. It's not, gluten free. It's like intact grains, right? Mm-hmm. So beans are an intact kind of a seed and they get absorbed very slowly. So they don't cause this insulin bump.
Got it.
And, it's the insulin bump that I think is really the problem with carbohydrates because the massive amount of insulin changes your hormones in ways that, you know, over the long term can be detrimental.
Yeah.
And, so, I have people use sprouted grains and sprouted grain bread is like the easiest swap to make in the world, right? Instead of just having regular toast, you have sprouted grain toast, and then you, instead of putting margarine on it, you put butter on it, or you put coconut oil on it, because coconut is a special kind of a fat that gets into your body's cells more quickly, and even if you are insulin resistant, you can use this kind of a fat for energy.
Coconut oil, or there's like coconut creams and all kinds of stuff like that.
Yeah.
Coconut milks.
Yes, it's the fat of the coconut, not the not like the water part of the coconut right. or the sweet part.
Right. Just the fat.
Yeah.
Okay.
The fat.
Those are the slow carbs. For let's get into a little bit the people who let me ask this about the Obesity Medicine Association. Anybody doing any thinking about nicotine?
So, you know, that's really interesting because nicotine, every doctor knows that when their patients quit smoking, they tend to gain weight. And we've always just simply said, well, it's just a hand-to-mouth behavior. But I feel
it's
energy.
It's metabolism, for sure.
Yeah, I feel like it's energy. Like people, it helps you burn fat,
yeah.
I feel like.
It looks like it. And also, it somehow does not allow muscle build up very well. They have very lean muscle and small. They get they shrink when they smoke. They like get lots of nicotine, but they don't get fat.
Huh.
They don't get no fat. They have very little fat deposition. So I always wonder why people didn't start to use nicotine therapeutically.
You know, I bet you that there was a time that people probably did, and I feel like there's got to be a role for it actually as like a weight loss. Medication.
You talk about these people that can't
not
burn.
Smoking it.
No, taking it in the lozenge or whatever. But you said these people can't burn fat efficiently. I thought, well, that's probably people that would benefit from nicotine.
Absolutely, like caffeine, right?
Yep,
or
caffeine too.
You know, other diet pills.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, you know, sometimes you do have to use. I always like to try to manipulate things with food, but sometimes. You can take advantage of the pharmaceutical
right. We're talking about really seriously, you know, people are in trouble medically with their body fat. So tell me about the people that can't burn efficiently. Who's that?
So now this is something that's very theoretical, and it's really just my theory. So, and I don't want to lay this on the Obesity Medicine Association, but it's going to be, you know, in my next book, and there's lots of references and science behind it. But I think what happens, the long and the short of it is when our diets are full of these fats that our mitochondria become damaged when we burn them, the cell is saying, okay, well, I'm not getting energy, right? I'm wanting energy, and I'm not getting an energy because, you know, I don't know why. The reason is my mitochondria aren't working properly. So what the cell says is, I want energy. And what's it do? Well, it puts a request out for more sugar by putting something called GLUT4 transporters, glucose transporters on the surface of the cell. And it's requesting more sugar. And what that does is it drops your blood sugar levels, but the cell gets energy. So now it can burn sugar for energy because it was the polyunsaturated fatty acids just damage the mitochondria. There's actually a study that shows that the ATP production drops to nothing if you raise that polyunsaturated fatty acid concentration high enough. So it's a real thing.
So you literally are pulling sugar out of the blood suddenly and then raising insulin to try to deal with that, right?
Well, what happens is you start to feel hypoglycemic, and then you eat.
Right.
So this is where we get a connection to the obesity epidemic between these, you know, the polyunsaturated fatty acids and the obesity epidemic, which is, if you look at the graphs of how the increased consumption of these oils has skyrocketed over the past 50 years, it perfectly parallels the obesity epidemic, which, you know, carbohydrates have started to level off since 2010, actually. Mm-hmm. And the obesity epidemic has not leveled off very much, and especially in children.
Mm-hmm. So in shifting the glucose intracellularly all of a sudden, is it affecting leptin and ghrelin biology as well?
Yeah, I'm sure that it's extremely detrimental to do that because your body panics, right? So now your blood sugar level drops, your brain says, whoa, where's my energy?
Mm-hmm.
Because you aren't in a state where you're producing ketones because you're having this, you know, you're on enough you're eating too often because just eating anything very often will stop your ketone production. But, you know, eating a normal, what we call in this country, a normal amount of carbohydrates is going to also block your ketone production. So your brain has nothing. And so you get desperately hungry. And this is where we, people come to us and we say, oh, well, it's just hypoglycemia. Have something to eat. Have something sweet. Have something sugar. Bring your blood sugar level back up. But that's not getting to the root of the problem. That's just kind of feeding into developing a whole new problem, actually, where now we're feeding people sugar and getting that messes up their hormones.
Yeah. Should we be taking ketones directly? You know, they have these ketone powders and things like that now. What's the status with ketone ingestions per se?
So it works fantastically, but I use it when people can't change their diet. So I've actually recommended it to a couple of my patients who have Parkinson's or early dementia, and it's made a huge difference. Gives them energy. Actually, the coconut oil does kind of the same thing. But the ketone supplements are, you know, 1,000 times more expensive than coconut oil, but they work great.
Can they be used with a protein diet?
Absolutely, okay. Absolutely. But you're not going to really need them after a while if you stick with a ketogenic diet.
Meaning what? What do you mean?
So your body's going to be producing ketones so efficiently that you just don't need to eat them.
I see. I must admit, I feel, now that I'm like 3 months in or something, I feel different. Not as, I don't know, excited as I was by how I was feeling. I don't know if that's just the brain adjusting, you know what I mean, to the background experience, or if there's something happens, some sort of adjustment over time.
Well, you know, what can happen is that we go from one extreme to the other, and it may be that you're missing some nutrients that you were getting before.
Yeah.
So B vitamins especially, like if once you get away from grains.
Yeah, I supplement with B12. I take a multivitamin every day. That doesn't mean I'm getting it all, but, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Like I never know if that really is everything. Because like you said, that we're still discovering vitamins.
Yeah. No, it's the dark ages, let's be clear. And so if I were to add something back, what would I add back and in what time frame and how frequent, that kind of thing?
So I guess now what you told me was you're doing a lot of meat and eggs.
Yes.
Are you doing dairy as well?
Yes.
Okay.
But so I feel better when I don't, great. I must admit. I eat all kinds of dairy, but I don't feel as good when I – but I'll overeat it a little bit because I don't know, crave it.
And it's so convenient, like cheese. It's kind of like the chips of the –
That's exactly right. It's exactly right.
If it's out,
I will eat it. So.
Yeah, so that's possibly part of it, is just that you were feeling better because you were actually in the process of losing weight.
Yeah,
more.
That's true.
And even when you're following a healthy diet, if you eat more often or you're in the process now of regaining weight, you're not going to get those ketones.
Okay. I think that's what's happening. That makes sense. And the ketones were what was making me feel so good.
Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense. That makes
sense.
And
you don't need to do it like every single day, you know, like some folks get so like paranoid about getting out of ketosis that, you know, they like count their how many mulberry seeds they eat, you know.
But I understand that because you feel so good when you're in it. You know what I mean? I got a little freaked out. Like, I can't, I'd be perfect because I don't lose this. It's like, this is great. And then I slowly did lose it. So now I'm trying to get it back.
Yeah, so it's like any learning process, right? You have to figure out where's that sweet spot. And so what I did, actually what Luke and I did when we wrote Deep Nutrition, Luke's my husband, co-author, is we just looked at what are traditional diets and what did people do? Because the whole premise of our book, the subtitle of which is Why Your Genes Need Traditional Food, is that we ought to be doing what we used to do because...
What we evolved for.
Yeah, that's what our genes are expecting us to do, and that's what we need in order to be optimally healthy. So what do we used to do? So we explored that from all different directions. Like, what was it that we ate, and even, like, how often do we eat? And when you go to places like France, where they do eat fairly high fat, you...
And high carb, too, though.
Yes, but they do eat their carbs, but they eat them in small amounts. So where I was going was they'll have like maybe a very tiny little breakfast. The breakfast might just really be mostly coffee with a itty-bitty little pastry. And then they'll have like their one big meal of the day, and then they won't eat very much at all after that, if anything. And so it's really almost like a one meal a day with a little bit of beverage, a little bit of wine, you know, on the other ends of it. And without trying to, that's kind of what I fell into, you know, 10 years ago, just out of convenience, because I would get up in the morning, I would do some exercise, then I would have my coffee with loads of milk and cream in it. I wouldn't eat anything because I was working in the, you know, all afternoon till late evening. I'd get home and eat dinner at 9 and then go right to bed. And I feel like that's kind of a pattern that a lot of people fall into when they're able to maintain their weight without even really trying.
Mm-hmm. The one meal a day. I was doing that for a long time, too. But I was hungry a lot. I mean, like crazy hungry.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, I'd be curious to know what were you doing in terms of the other foods, right? Because was that with this diet or was that?
No, that was just I would eat a more just balanced, a lot of fruits and vegetables then and a more balanced diet.
So, yeah. So fruits have that carbohydrate that makes us hungry.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I feel. And so if you want to do the one meal a day, it's very important to not get a sugar burst because that's where the insulin that makes your body produce fat out of the extra carbohydrate, and then you get that sugar low.
Yeah.
And, of course, the kinds of fat that you're eating, right? Because if you're eating the wrong kinds of fat and you can't get your energy out of them very efficiently, then your body's going to be craving sugar and you are going to be really hungry.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, if you like my show, you're going to love The Good Life with Stevie and Cezanne. Join them each week as they inspire minds, captivate listeners, and have powerful conversation with people who are making an impact. From major celebrities to everyday people, they'll motivate you to live the good life. Listen for free for each week on Podcast One or wherever you get your podcast. Check it out. Well, if you're looking to buy a car, you've probably seen lots of terms that confuse, like MSRP or invoice or list price or dealer price. I my whole life I've been hearing that stuff, and I still don't know what any of that means. What you really want is the true price. Thus, from TrueCar, we are now introducing True Price. You can know exactly what you'll pay for the car you want, including fees and accessories, and that before you ever get to the dealership. TrueCar dealers will show you the true price on cars like the one you want, all from the comfort of your home. And you see the scattergram of what people pay, so you know you're getting a good price, a fair price. And your TrueCar certified dealer set their true price competitively so they can win your business. And remember, it's whether you want to buy new or used, you get the same true price and you get the same information, that same scatter, that same confidence. And once you lock in that price, you know you're locking in a price for an actual vehicle on a TrueCar certified dealer's lot. So overall, you enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. Well, you've heard me talk about TheraWorks Relief, and if you're one of the millions of Americans who suffer from muscle cramps in your legs, feet, particularly at night, we have relief. It is TheraWorks Relief, topical foam, clinically proven to relieve muscle cramps quickly. And with daily use, like regular use a couple times a day, TheraWorks Relief can even prevent the muscle cramps before they start. For over a year now, I've been recommending TheraWorks Relief to my family, friends, and patients, and there have been some stunning results. These patients of mine, patients and family, then give it to other people because they're so enthused by the results. TheraWorks Relief is the real deal. If you're somebody that has nocturnal cramps, it's disruptive to your sleep. That's bad for your health. If you can't exercise because of cramps, TheraWorks Relief is my choice for preventing and relieving those muscle cramps. Make it yours too. Get TheraWorks Relief today at select CVS, Rite Aid, and Walgreens pharmacies, or just go to TheraWorksRelief.com, TheraWorksRelief Relief. And speak to your pharmacist. You'll find they are as enthused as I am because for the first time, we have something to give you that's not a pill, no medication, and it works. TheraWorks Relief. Experience relief for muscle cramps for yourself. That's TheraWorks Relief for your muscle cramps.
Now, I think I need to reduce the dairy and reduce the volume. Pretty simple. And by the way, not that's easy adjustment when you're not hungry.
That's really the magic act of the ketogenic diet is that it helps your brain have that energy, and then you're not feeling this desperate hunger. It's not like normal hunger. Like, I call normal hunger is like you're going to eat anything. Like, whatever your mom would put in front of you, you would just scarf it down because you have an appetite.
Right.
And I kind of feel like the word appetite, I haven't heard that in a long time.
Yes.
You know,
that's right.
People say they're hungry and they're hangry. But they're not just like, I could eat anything. I'm not dying. I'm not desperate. I'm not going to pass out if I don't get anything to eat right now. But I could, you know, if you gave me liver pate with some kind of weird green vegetable and something I've never had before, you know what? I'd probably try it. And guess what? It would taste better because hunger is the great teacher, and it helps your body appreciate the food that you're getting and new flavors.
Yes, I've noticed that too. It does enhance all that. Go back to the traditional food. So be more specific. So if people that haven't read your book yet or want to know what's in there, other than, as I've mentioned, bone marrow and close to the bone grist meat, what else? Mm-hmm.
So we call it four pillars of world cuisine. So there's four categories of foods, which are really four strategies of extracting nutrition from your environment, you know, when you are self-sufficient, because we were, 100, 200 years ago. We had to do it all ourselves. So we had the first strategy was just eat fresh food, just like eat it fresh. You didn't even really cook it, or if you did cook it, you didn't cook it much at all. So sushi is an example, right? Obviously, you know, fresh fruits, vegetables, and nuts and things that we can eat without cooking. But
any particular
dairy,
nuts?
Also.
Particular nuts?
Any nuts that you could get into easily.
Right. But now, so, even the same
any
now?
And all.
Because we get it's easy now for all of them.
Yeah, all of them, and all of them are good. Like, each nut has a little bit of a different nutritional profile. So like, almonds have a ton of protein and vitamin E, and Brazil nuts have a ton of selenium, and, you know, each little nut's kind of like a spectrum of a little nut rainbow of different slice of the nutritional profile for each of them.
Did you hear there was some crazy, I'll just ask you because it's out in the vapors, a crazy news story about Brazil nuts and spermatogenesis or sperm health or something?
Like too many of them, or is that
no, like
good
they're,
for
they're,
them?
They're, yeah, good for sperm, essentially.
Oh. Well, that's good.
Okay, you haven't heard that, though.
I have not heard that one.
How about macadamia nuts? Good ones?
Well, actually, macadamia nuts have a very similar nutritional profile to coconut. So they've got a little bit more of these medium-chain fatty acids that are a little bit easier to burn. And they're good. They taste very good. But they're actually relatively low in minerals compared to other nuts. Like tropical fruits and nuts, I feel like are more about energy than they are about complex nutrition. Like,
okay.
If you look at their nutritional profiles, they're not as great in terms of diversity of vitamins and minerals as some of the, you know, the non-tropical nuts and fruits. As delicious as they are, they really are more about energy of storage for the plant, I feel like. I don't know why that is. It's just something I've noticed. But still, like, I don't recommend avoiding them, and I don't recommend eating like one over all the others either. It's about diversity, really. When it comes to nutrition, you know, diversity is the way to go. But it has to be of real food.
Okay.
You know, a lot of folks like to say everything in moderation, right? So, but I mean, these days, everything in moderation of a typical grocery store is mostly going to come out of a brightly colored junk food sack. So that we have to qualify it.
Okay.
But getting back to the question on the traditional and the four pillars. So fresh food, and then if you have too much fresh food and you don't have a refrigerator to store it in, you have to do something to preserve it for later. So you ferment it. And so fermented foods are another very important strategy of nourishing our bodies. And what they do, aside from the obvious preserving the food, is they give us probiotics or good bacteria that help our gut health and our immune system. Sprouted food also is similar in that it works with nature to enhance the nutritional value of something. So we're sprouting seeds, and so that's why I recommend sprouted grain bread, because you sprout the wheat berry, and it reduces the carbohydrate and increases the fiber and the other complexity of nutrition. So, yeah. And then so the third one is the meat on the bone. So that's the eating close to the bone and the skin and the ligaments and everything and making bone stocks out of it, which create these gelatinous broths and soups and stews and just really taste good, as far as making gravies and just making stuff that tastes good is delicious. And then a little less delicious, but much more actually very nutritious, are the organ meats. And, you know, they get a bad rap because we have grown up without eating them, and they are very complex nutrition. And have you noticed, Dr. Drew, that people who are picky eaters, they're not picky around, well, I only like liver, or only like, you know,
pancreas.
Very high nutrient,
right,
high nutrient. They like bland food.
Yes.
And so it's, I feel like it's something in the brain that's not processing the flavors properly, and it just rejects them. And so this, so that in a sense, our, you know, cultural rejection of most organ meats is a reflection of the fact that we just don't have a complicated palate in this country because we just don't grow up educating our palates.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the bottom line.
Yeah.
Right? We don't acculturate ourselves. I mean, the brain is set up to adopt a culture, and you know, and we don't do it to kids.
Right. Yeah. And you know, you grow up, you just, it's so much easier to like something as an adult if you got it when you were little.
Exactly.
And especially if you had good memories around it and your mom gave it to you.
Yep.
Oh, this gentle, soothing voice that your mother feeds you with these new foods and everything is supposed to be associated.
I ate some organs at your recommendation after last time I talked to you. It wasn't that yet on this diet, but I thought, all right, I'll try it. And I think now, it's funny, I've been thinking back, that was probably 8 months ago or something, and I've been thinking about how that would taste me now, and I would look forward to it. It's interesting. It's a different, like you said, your taste even adjusts when you're on these different dietary plans.
But I really think, you know, it helps to be hungry because we have to be able to like foods other than, you know, white chicken meat and pasta, which is the biggest challenge I have when I'm working with patients who are trying to lose weight, you know, and in a sense, I almost feel like I've had to become a tiny bit of an addiction specialist because people are almost like addicted to 100%. Blandness.
It's a very similar kind of at least the reward structure around it, you know, the motivational systems around it are very, very similar. It's not as powerful. You don't have to have the same focus for managing and adjusting it, but same phenomena.
I think when somebody's in the middle of a hypoglycemic spell, it is almost as powerful.
I'll tell you what. If you are, I don't know if it's strictly the metabolic syndrome folk like myself, but when you are going at the carbohydrates and then you decide to stop, all the symptoms. I mean, it's not, of course, as intense, but all the symptoms mimic heroin withdrawal, with irritability, agitation, lability, and a sense of desperation. And desperation is probably the most unpleasant symptom the heroin addict gets. And when you watch your patients, they will get desperate. Like, what's going on?
Would just crawl across hot coals to get the stuff.
You get this desperation. Yeah. It's a very strange feeling. It's very unpleasant.
You know, you're reminding me of a documentary that a friend of mine made called The Magic Pill.
Mm-hmm.
And he's talking about, it's one of these food documentaries, right? Because we have so much wrong with our food supply. It's like a whole genre of documentaries now.
Right.
And in it, they chronicle the saga of a 5-year-old girl with profound autism, nonverbal, whose dad was a heroin addict and has his daughter go basically cold turkey off of those little like goldfish and, you know, flavored yogurts and all of her favorite foods in trying to improve her health and her, you know, hopefully her autism and getting her on a real food diet. And he's watching her, and because for 5 days she just says no. I mean, she shakes her head, she doesn't say it, but she just refuses. And she literally is crawling across the counter to try to get to where her, you know, treats used to be stored, which is now empty. And the dad is like, his heart is totally, you know, aching because he's watching this and he's seeing how, you know, he knows what she was going through because he was a heroin addict and had to go through the withdrawals.
Yep.
And it was, you have to admire him because that was really, you know, the willpower here.
Well, but he's been on the other side of detoxing. You know, once you get through it, he knows there's benefits to be derived. So he has that faith that a lot of people may not have.
That's true.
Yep. I mean, it's why I work with an abstinence-based program is because I have a faith and a judgment in who can make it. Well, at least I have some idea. Sometimes I get surprised. But it's that faith and hope when you've seen these miracles, you know, to see what happens on the other side. It gives you more motivation to work through people.
And maybe that's why, like, when she started, like, he didn't seem too surprised that it totally worked, but it, like, worked, like, within the snap of a finger, like, one day, on day 5, she basically just actually picked up a fork and started eating the food that was put in front of her, and she had not ever used a fork before.
Interesting. Really interesting. So, Kate, we got to wrap this up. What else do you, before we do, where do you want people to go? What do you want them to know? What's coming?
So go to my website, which is drkate.com, and just sign up for the subscription, because I am working on the next book, which is going to be coming out in the next year, and it's going to be the most scientific, programmatic, problem-solving weight loss book ever. And actually, what I'm saying is that, you know, for decades, doctors have let the patients run the weight loss conversation. And what I mean is we've said yes when they said, well, I want to lose, you know, 40 pounds in a month. Can you do that for me, doc? And we said, yeah, here, just, you know, cut everything and blah, blah, blah. Well, that doesn't work when you're too sick. And so that's why a lot of diets fail, because we're not matching the diet to the state of metabolic health.
Also, there's a weird religious fervor around everyone's different positions. I mean, it's very bizarre. Like, you, if you're a plant-based, you're just, and you're on this cause of right and the side of right. And if you're eating meat, you're contributing to the demise of the planet. And there's this weird, not just political, but religious energy around it. What do we do with that?
Well, I guess we really just have to, like, I think there should be a comedian that does nothing but make nutrition jokes, or nutritionism jokes.
And they'd start, people would be crying, not out of laughter by the end, unfortunately, because it gets tragic at a certain point. Let me ask this one last thing before I let you go, which is, there was a study, I think it was in JAMA about a week ago, it might have been in the journal or something, but it was this big, it was a large meta-analysis of plant-based versus meat diets, and suggesting that people that had adhered to a plant-based diet lived longer. Did you see that study?
You know what, I didn't see that particular one, but I have seen like 1,000 others that said the same thing, because they seem to come out at regular intervals about the benefits of, you know, a plant-based diet.
They seem apocryphal to me. I don't know. They don't fit my clinical experience. It reminds me of the Women's Health Initiative, where all this data came out. I was like, no, something's wrong with this data.
Well, when you're driving science purely by statistics, I feel like that in and of itself is a red flag. You know, that it's science by statistics is not science, really, honestly. You have to have some checks and balances, and you can't when all you're doing is looking at statistics.
Well, particularly when you're not dealing with – I mean, I guess you could use statistics if you're looking at a particular – if you were looking at ATPase in the wall of a mitochondria. But when you look at gigantic systems like the human being, and one versus the other are so different, the average, which is sort of what the stats are looking at, is very different reflection of reality. Because we're pooled in all kinds of different biological camps.
I think Michael Pollan pointed out something really important when so he wrote The Omnivore's Dilemma about 10 years ago, and he said that you know, what these plant-based diets do is they ask you to restrict something, and they're telling you that this is the healthy way. And so what you're doing is you're selecting people who are interested in health and able to restrict.
Right, that's true. So it's a self-selecting group. And then you
said
sign up at your website for a subscription. What is that? Subscription to what?
To just my updates, so that people can find out when this next fantastic book is finally going to be
released. And it's obvious on the website? It's on the front page?
Yeah, well, one of those little annoying pop-up boxes.
Right. Okay.
So, yeah, just put your email in there, and then it won't ever pop up again.
All right, we'll do it. I'll be at drkate.com, D-R-C-A-T-E. And it's always a privilege to talk to you, and good luck with this new book. I can't wait to hear about it. And I'll interview you again then when that comes out, okay?
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Guru.
Right,
it's so great to talk to you.
Privilege. Thanks, Kate. We'll talk soon.
Okay.
Okay.
Have a good night. Bye.
Bye-bye.
For call-in times and topics, follow the show on Twitter at Dr. Guru Podcast. That's D-R-D-R-E-W Podcast. The music from today's episode can be found on the Swingin' Sounds of the Dr. Guru Podcast, now available on iTunes. And while you're there, don't forget to rate the show. The Dr. Guru Podcast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana and Gary Smith. For more information, go to drdrew.com. All conversation and information exchanged during the participation in the Dr. Guru Podcast is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only. Do not confuse this with treatment or medical advice or direction. Nothing on these podcasts supplement or supersede the relationship and direction of your medical caretakers. Although Dr. Guru is a licensed physician with specialty board certifications by the American Board of Internal Medicine and the American Board of Addiction Medicine, he is not functioning as a physician in this environment. The same applies to any professionals who may appear on the podcast or drdrew.com.
Saving money on your entire roofing project now at Menards. Protect your home for years to come with Owens Corning Architectural Shingles. They offer long-lasting performance while providing ultimate protection with a 130 miles per hour wind rating and limited lifetime warranty. Choose from over 50 options of Owens Corning shingles in-store and on Menards.com. And check out more of our great deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.